to the Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the show. We're into the second hour of our program today. A reminder, coming up at 5 o'clock tonight, take you to the Rogers Centre in Toronto. Game 2 of the 3-game set between the Blue Jays and the Red Sox taking place at Rogers Centre. Bit of news from the Blue Jays today. Nate Pearson shut down for the next 3 to 4 weeks. Suffered a strain in his right lat. Guy can just not stay healthy. Saw the comparison today on Twitter. It's like if Devin Travis was a pitcher. That's where we're at right now with Nate Pearson. It's really too bad. Hope the best for him here down the road. But, yeah, it's a guy who's shown so far the inability to stay healthy. Tonight's pitching matchup in Toronto will be Michael Wacha against Ross Stripling. So that is your pitching matchup tonight. Blue Jays victorious in Game 1 of the 3-game set last night, 7-2. Over the Red Sox. Game 2 tonight, 5:07 first pitch, Sportsnet 960 and Sportsnet on television. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. Aaron Howell is here as well as our producer. And reminder, you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. Never miss a moment or a guest. I want to be reminding you as well that all week this week, Boomer in the Morning is giving you a chance to win a family four-pack of seats in the Sportsnet 960 reserved section on the Stampede Parade Route. All you need to do is be listening to his program. They give you a trivia question every single day, and that is how you get prime seating, Logan, without having to wake up the same time as Boomer. That's pretty much what this comes down to. And during our little reserve party, by the way, we'll be live on location. And you can also enjoy free coffee and baked goods while you're there taking in the parade. We'll contact all the winners coming up next Monday. For full details, check out our contest page at sportsnet.ca/960. Are you ready to play a game of what if?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's play a game of what if. First off, what if the Calgary Flames do not re-sign Johnny Gaudreau? If the Flames and Johnny Gaudreau cannot come to a agreement on a new contract, Logan, how does that change the offseason? Put on your GM hat right now. How does that change your offseason if Johnny Gaudreau is no longer a member of the Calgary Flames?
Well, it immediately opens up some cap space for you, which makes it a little bit more interesting, because I think, given the market and given that there are a couple of players out there of interest, probably in the UFA world, perhaps gives Brad Treliving the option to, and we've seen this before, Will, you know, make a trade, or, you know, find somebody that the organization's liked for a while that you normally wouldn't be able to bring in if this offseason, you know, revolved around signing Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk to big money long-term contracts. I think the most notable name, and the one that I'm probably on board with the most, is, of course, Philip Forsberg. He's younger than Johnny Gaudreau, has a similar shooting percentage to him. Points per game were very close last year. He's coming off the best season of his career. We've talked about, you know, whether or not this is a big factor or not. The Swedish factor, too. Calgary, obviously, going so far as to have a Trey Croner Flames shirt last year. They had so many of them. So why not keep the tradition going? I think as far as the UFA market goes, that's the closest thing to a play-driving winger that you're going to get if it's not Johnny Gaudreau. Philip Forsberg last year in 69 games. Nice. 42 goals, 42 assists. That's good for 1.22 points per game, 226 shots on goal, and averaging just over 18 minutes of ice time. His former team, Nashville, potentially former team, the Nashville Predators, coming off a deal that signed him to a cap hit of just about $6 million per season. That, to me, would be my biggest priority, is to see where Philip Forsberg's mind is at. It's a right shot, I think, that fits well potentially with Elias Lindholm. And it's not Johnny Gaudreau. He's never been, you know, that type of high-end producer. Like I said, this is coming off of his best year ever, but a potential 40-40 guy that you could bring in and use some of that cap space for to lessen that blow of losing Johnny Gaudreau for nothing for a guy that's a year younger than Gaudreau, too. And funny enough, we talked about it, Will. You know, they have the exact same birth date, just a year apart. I would certainly focus in on that. And, you know, perhaps you're using some of that cap space that you may have gotten in that situation, too, to look at a couple of the UFAs, whether it's, you know, are you interested in bringing back a Kelly Yarncroke at a reduced price? Is Erica Branson somebody you'd like to see back here? I think that opens up those sort of conversations for me. And again, I wouldn't guarantee it because free agency can sometimes be a swing and miss scenario that just having that sort of cap space, it gives Brad Treliving the flexibility to go out and potentially explore some trades as well that he couldn't have before.
How much do you see Gaudreau and Tkachuk's futures tied together? Are they one on their own? Do you see them tied together? Does that change your priority for number 19 if Johnny Gaudreau leaves? Like, how do you see those two scenarios?
I don't think I think they're slightly tied together. I think based on success and the year that they had, you can look and see that and say, look, I know I've got a great fit playing on that line. And we were able to have, you know, two of our best career years ever playing on the same line, the same power play together. But given the age difference, and I think given the point that they're both at in their careers, I don't think that what happens with one necessarily dictates what happens with the other. I've heard plenty of people, and I'm sure you have too, Will, on social media or even on our text line at 960-960, we're looking for you to chime in on this too, that, you know, if Johnny Gaudreau goes, that means that Matthew Tkachuk is gone or should be, you know, looked at in the same vein to avoid that same situation happening next year where he potentially just signs his $9 million qualifying offer this summer and walks to free agency next year and you don't get anything for him there. I'm not at that point yet. I think Matthew Tkachuk, based off the year he had at 24 years old, 104 points, a better playoff, still not maybe at the level we would have hoped in some areas, but a better playoff. I would still be interested in bringing Matthew Tkachuk back on a long-term deal. If there was an 8 or a 7 year deal that made sense for Matthew Tkachuk, I'm still in that camp of doing that because you've got Jacob Markstrom signed up. You have Elias Lindholm at a very reasonable cap number for the next couple of seasons. Tyler Toffoli's here at a good number for the next couple of years. I think it still makes sense to me to have that conversation with Matthew. But again, if this is, you know, another situation where, look, we'll talk until September and then maybe we'll rehash things next year. I'm not going down that road again if I'm Brad Treliving and company. That's just not something I'd be willing to entertain because it might be one thing to let Gaudreau potentially walk here in free agency. To make the same mistake with Matthew, I think would be a catastrophic failure for this franchise.
It's going to be interesting to see how both situations play out. I'm with you. I don't necessarily see them tied exclusively together, but you know, for the cap space conversation side that you had there about Gaudreau and if he leaves, you certainly opens the door for the ability to sign Tkachuk long term, and would leave you the ability to, you know, leaves you the ability to give him maybe a little bit more money or what he wants. I think signing both guys really handicaps your or handcuffs you going forward. Signing one or the other would allow you to fill in more of the other gaps that might still be there. But yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens with both those situations, but not necessarily tied together. So back to the go ahead.
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on, well, I on just, the what-if scenarios,
yeah,
too, right?
I was going to say, you know, back to the what-if if Gaudreau leaves. I certainly think that Philip Forsberg would be a very ideal target for them. How realistic? Well, I certainly, you know, don't know if I can say definitively one way or the other how I feel about it. I mean, obviously, know nothing about, you know, personal side for Philip Forsberg. I think having the amount of Swedes this team has right now in their locker room, I think there's probably a good potential to have if you're Brad Treliving, a couple of these guys in your back pocket to be making some phone calls and at least selling Calgary to a guy like Forsberg. So I think that is a huge help to you if you're the Flames. But again, it's impossible to know where he stands from a personal standpoint. But yeah, I think he would be a great fit on the Calgary Flames. And the one thing too that we don't talk enough about, Logan, is the fact that he's a right shot. Calgary doesn't have a lot of right shot forwards, and certainly for Philip Forsberg, he's not going to, and we've said this a lot, you're not going to directly replace Johnny Gaudreau, but I think if you're able to land somebody of his ilk and certainly of his status, it would help soften the blow of losing a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, and I think that that would be a good replacement inside the top six, because again, even though Forsberg shoots right, he plays on the left side, and having him to fill in on that gap on your left wing side would be, I think, ideal if you're Calgary. And again, it might not end up being anything, Logan, but I think the ability to, you know, have some of your Swedes on your team give a phone call or two or go visit him, I think that would be beneficial to you if you're the Flames.
It can't hurt right now. Is everybody, Cal Yarncroke and Cousins with Elias Lindholm or best buddies with Jake Mark? No, that's certainly not the case for everybody, but you never know what kind of connection there is, whether it's been passing through, you know, different Swedish leagues or world championships, international competition, where maybe some of those relationships developed a little bit more. I would think it certainly doesn't hurt your case for whatever it's worth. And you're right, it's impossible to sit here and know today what Philip Forsberg is looking for. Is he looking for the max term and the max dollars he can get? Is he looking for an ideal fit? Is he looking for a change of scenario, a different lifestyle than what he had in Nashville? There's plenty of things to consider in all of this, I think, given what's out there. And it's hard to, that's why I always say the trading one is, I always put that as an option, but names are so hard to come around. I don't want to throw out a bunch of names that, you know, may or may not come to fruition. You don't know who the organization values internally. We know Forsberg looks like he's heading to free agency, so it's a little easier to play the what-if game with a free agent like that. But you're also, you know, for a guy like that, you're going to be competing, I would think, with a number of other teams.
A lot of suitors in that camp, for
exactly.
Sure. There's no question about it. Other big-name UFAs that would be out there from a forward standpoint, you look at certain players that are similar, because, again, we don't know what Malkin's status is with Pittsburgh. I think the chances of him being in Calgary anyways would be very, very low. Claude Giroux, same thing. I don't know if there's a desire for him to be playing in Canada, certainly even in Calgary. In terms of big-name free agent forwards, I know that Lou brought this up earlier in terms of the what-if game. And again, he plays on the wing. He's a left shot. But where would you sit on the Andre Palat train?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because Palat does a lot of the right things, and I think as far as fitting into a Daryl Sutter system, Palat makes a lot of sense. It's tough, because once you get past Forsberg, a lot of these guys, and Palat's one of them, that, you know, I think does a lot of the little things, but again, as good as Johnny was at some of the little things last year, the biggest thing that you're going to miss and you're going to try to make up for is the points.
Right.
And Palat, as good as he's been, is a while off of his best career season when it comes to points. I believe it was, I want to say 14, 15. He had a 60.
His rookie season. His only only year where he scored over 20 and was a guy that was productive all over the ice. Obviously a guy that floats around 40 to 50 anyways yearly. And come playoff time, we talked about his production. But yeah, in terms of the career highs, you're going back to his first 2 years in the league. 2013-14, 23 goals, 59 points. The year after that, 16 goals and 63 points. After that, in the seven seasons since, he's only reached over 50 points once. But also keep in mind, a guy who has not really had a year where he hasn't had injuries. A lot of consistent 50 and 60 game type seasons, played 55 of the 56 in the shortened 2021 season and played 77 this year. And is also a guy who's played over 70 playoff games the last three seasons. So certainly not a guy who misses, you know, months on end. But yeah, I know that Lou brought that up. And I think his size, the way he plays, I think those would fit into what Calgary wants to do.
Yeah, the best way I could put looking at Andre Palat from a free agent standpoint is if I'm Calgary last year and I'm in the conversation looking for a guy like Blake Coleman who's going to fit into my top nine sort of thing, and it's Palat instead of Coleman, I'm certainly interested in that conversation because I feel like they're, you know, I think you're talking a little bit more offensive punch coming from a guy like Palat than, say, Coleman, but does a lot of the same things. You can move up and down your lineup, pretty consistent numbers that aren't going to blow you away. I think the point drop-off there is and look, I'm not saying maybe that's the best option for them. Who knows how it winds up working. I just think you have to aim a little bit higher to, you know, sort of fill in some of the point gap there, right? I think you're, I have nothing against Andre Palat. I just don't know that that's the kind of guy that that comes in and helps you soften that blow as much because he doesn't do a lot of what Johnny Gaudreau does, and that's what your team is going to be lacking a lot of should 13 go to free agency.
Other big target I would have, and if I'm the Flames, I would certainly have high on my list. And again, a lot of these players, he'll be competing with some very good teams for their services. So by no means is a guarantee they would even entertain coming to Calgary. But I certainly think if you're Chill Living and Company, you're checking in on these players. The other one for me is Nikushkin. I think that he would be a great fit, a guy that's got a lot of size. You wonder how his game would mesh with a Daryl Sutter type system, but I think that we've seen that, you know, those type of players can work. And I certainly thought we saw his game get to a level that, you know, we hoped he would get to when he was drafted in the first round a number of years ago. But I think that that would be a guy that would be very high on my list if I'm the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, just 27 years old, only 400 NHL games to his career. His best year ever, at, you know, 52 points, close to it being a 30-30 guy with 25 goals and 27 assists. And I think probably in my mind, based on what I saw from him, put him in the right situation, I wouldn't be surprised to see him beat those numbers in his career before it's done. Well, I don't know how you feel about that. I feel like he could be a 30-35 point guy, or a goal and assist guy, excuse me, and, you know, push maybe for 60 or 70 points if he's in the right scenario. I think now that he's starting to come into his own, you could see that a little bit more, and does a lot of good things for you. I mean, he averaged a ton of ice time. He was just under, or just over, 19 minutes last year. And I think fills a lot of spots, whether it's power play, penalty kill.
And again, if you lose Gaudreau, it certainly helps your top six.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And speed too. The guy's got speed to burn for a guy that's 6'4". And we saw how much that plays into, to the offseason. I think that would be an area to look for sure.
And again, a guy that banged up foot, played over 23 minutes in that final game, right? So I think there's no doubting his toughness either when it comes to his ability to play through things and still be very effective. He was a beast in that Stanley Cup final. So again, the names in terms of free agents, I think somewhat limited, but what about the trade market? Anything that, you know, that is certainly, I think, a bit of a more dangerous game. We don't know who's available, and that's one of the areas where Brad Treliving is fantastic because he's always checking in and making sure if there's a player available, he's going to be on top of that thing. But that would obviously be another area where the Flames could replace Johnny Gaudreau if he were to move on.
Yeah, the ones that I've sort of looked at and you know, sort of dreamed or dared to dream in the RFA world, if you will, is, you know, some people won't like this because for whatever reason, size, I don't know, plays into the conversation all the time, despite him, you know, being second in scoring last year. It'll be the immediate comparison that you can't win with a small player. I would really check in on Kevin Fiala in Minnesota. I have no idea how they get that deal done.
When you said small player, I thought you were going to say DeBrincat.
Really? Yeah, that's another one that would be interesting to me, especially knowing how high he's been on people like Frank Cervelli's trade list. But Fiala, for me, as an RFA would be interesting. We've seen Bradshaw Living have success. I just don't know how Minnesota
Well, I was going to say, their cap situation, I think you can maybe take advantage a little bit of what's going on there. Let's not forget that they're going into this three-year period where they're going to have upwards of $15 million in dead money on the buyouts of Parise and Suter. And, you know, for Kevin Fiala, obviously a guy who really found his game in Minnesota here the last couple of years, and you know, three consecutive 20-goal seasons, a 30-plus goal season this year, 85 points. And, I think would be a guy that absolutely would fit in nicely.
That was the main guy for me. It's interesting. I don't mind that DeBrincat one either. As far as a natural goal scorer goes, he's probably up there among the best that you might find out there, according to everybody that he, you know, might sound crazy, but he is available. He's 24 years old. Does that fit the mold of, you know, do you have enough assets to get that done? You know, especially seeing that you, and the hard thing about a trade too is, yes, you have cap space, but do you have the assets to get this done? You don't have a first round pick this year, thanks to the Tyler Toffoli trade. So, you know, do you start peeking into your prospect pool of is it a Yusuf Alamaki or someone else that you are interested in moving to help fill that void? I think that's an interesting conversation to be had too. And the RFA ones I lean to naturally because of Brad's history, but
well, and that age too, right?
I think that fits in there. He loves
the age group of those RFAs, and you know, acquiring a player like that, you certainly have runway to get a deal done. You don't have to necessarily get it done on the spot. Couple of texts at 960-960. That's the look at, and again, I guess the other side of that, what if Gaudreau stays, just limits your opportunity to add outside of that, right? Because you're then tied up cap-wise. You probably are going to re-sign Tkachuk at that rate. And even if you do trade Tkachuk, you're still, you know, significantly different in a cap outlook with Gaudreau here, because as we've talked about a lot, it's probably upwards of $9 million. And yeah, that would certainly limit some of the things and the possibilities we just talked about. 960-960, a couple of texts and thoughts from you. Hey, guys, it's Bill. No way Tkachuk signs here long term.
No one thought Brady was signing in Ottawa either. So
it's true. 960-960, everyone's saying it's not about money, but isn't it possible that he's looking for a front-loaded contract, say $30 to $40 million, which the Flames could not afford?
Can't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, you could. I guess you can make it heavy in signing bonuses, but again, I don't think it's about money with Johnny Gaudreau. If Johnny doesn't re-sign with Calgary, I go hard after Forsberg. If Tkachuk is the only one, or only does the 1 year, I trade him and go hard after Kadri. We need a playoff center. If Johnny goes, move Lindholm to the wing, and get a center. I still think Lindholm's your best center. I don't know if moving him off center is the best.
What center? What center are you getting that's Nazem better than Kadri, Elias Lindholm?
Is Nazem Kadri coming here?
He already said no to you once.
And I don't think you're getting a number one. Yeah, to Logan's point, I don't think there's a center out there right now that's better than Lindholm.
It sounds great. Don't get me wrong. It sounds great on paper, but name me the center that's better than Elias Lindholm that you're acquiring, because they just don't come up that often. And when they do, they cost a lot.
Give Tkachuk the captaincy and sign him there. So many big-name free agent players, so forget about Johnny and improve the team through free agency. Also, this makes it easier to sign Mangiapane and possibly Gudbranson and Zadorov. That comes from Sean. And then someone asked about Josh Anderson. I don't think he's available from Montreal, but I guess you never say never. But I certainly don't know if he's a guy that would be available this offseason for Calgary to go after. But again, you never know, and that's what makes the NHL offseason a ton of fun.
It's going to happen fast.
Oh, man.
The next couple of days and the next couple of weeks.
As soon as we get into next week and get closer to the NHL draft, madness, which is next Thursday, it's going to be chaos. And certainly, as we've talked about a lot, you know, things leaking out, rumors left and right. It's going to be a lot of fun when it comes to the NHL offseason. It's what we love as sports media and as fans, and we're getting closer to that time here as we inch closer to turning that calendar to July. It is just before 3:30 on your Tuesday afternoon. It is June 28th. We thank you, as always, for being with us this afternoon. He's Logan. I'm Will. We are live and underway from the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. When we come back, we're going to shift gears for a little bit away from hockey. Revisit, of course, hockey in the top of the 3 o'clock hour, or the 4 o'clock hour, which is hour 3 of the program. But when we come back, we will go to the West Coast. He is taking the league by storm. We've got to talk about him, Nathan Rourke and the BC Lions, as we dive in on that around the corner. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome back to the show. We continue. Hour number 2 is underway. It's the big show. Will Nault, Logan Gordon with you today. It's a bye week for the Calgary Stampeders. They'll be back in action in week number 5. But week 4 kicks off on Thursday, kicking off your long weekend in the nation's capitals. Ottawa hosts the BC Lions, and everybody is talking about the BC Lions. And I wonder why. What's happening with the Lions? And nothing come to mind for me. Oh, wait, yeah, just that quarterback who, in the offseason, all you heard was maybe the gamble the BC Lions were taking by handing the keys to the franchise to youngster Nathan Rourke. But boy, has it paid off in the early going. And we thought, oh, maybe the momentum would be gone after a bye week in week 2. But the BC Lions picked up right where they left off with an absolute pounding of the Toronto Argonauts last Saturday, 44-3. And through 2 games this season, the BC Lions have outscored their opponents 103-18, and you thought, okay, great season debut. What can he do for an encore? And Nathan Rourke might have been better in game number 2 of the season. For more on that, we head down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, welcoming in Matt Baker from the BC Lions, all things content over there on the West Coast. And Matt, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
Hey, guys. Awesome. Yeah, appreciate you having me.
No problem at all. I mean, this has got to be a pretty cool time right now with the BC Lions. I mean, as I just kind of mentioned in the intro, there was a lot of question, I think, and certainly maybe some uncertainty around what Nathan Rourke would be able to do when handed the keys, essentially, you know, with not a lot of help behind him. It's a lot of youth there in BC, and I don't think things could have gone better in the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, and truthfully, I'll echo what you guys were saying. You flash it back to January, early February, maybe it was, where Mike Riley officially gave word that he was retiring. And that same day, head coach Rick Campbell comes out and announces that we're preparing for Nathan to be the starter. I was included amongst those who were surprised. And that was nothing against Nathan Rourke at all. But you look, I mean, body of work, really, 2 starts last year. One of them very impressive, kind of echoed the first 2 this year, right? But that was against an Edmonton team last year that was playing 3-7 due to all their COVID stuff. And but, you know, then I kind of backtrack a little bit and think, okay, this kid was drafted in 2020, essentially had a whole year without football to prepare, to study. No doubt was doing stuff as far as install and the offense and getting accustomed to Jordan Maksimek and all that, and then perfect redshirt year, if you will, under Michael Riley. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be easy to say I'm not surprised. I think I'd be lying if I said I wasn't surprised at the magnitude of what this kid has done, but I will tell you this. I mean, I've been around quite a few quarterbacks in my time here with this team. Not many sort of match the focus and the work ethic of Nathan Rourke. I mean, this is a guy, it sounds cliche, but first one in, last one to leave, always in football mode. And he's not satisfied yet, guys. I mean, we just talked to him after practice here this afternoon and kind of joking. I was like, so what do you have in store for an encore? He says, win. That's it. So he's not reading the headlines. He's not buying into the hype. He knows he has a job to do. And just kind of his demeanor and his mindset, I think, is one of the more impressive attributes for this kid.
What stuck out to you the most? I think everybody looks at the numbers and maybe they're you know, you look at 718 yards, 7 touchdowns, no picks, 9 incompletions. But, Matt, a lot of people talking about this young man's athleticism as well.
Yeah, I mean, he brings an element to this offense that was missing for the last couple of years. I mean, Mike Riley, a great quarterback, one of the toughest quarterbacks you'll ever see. But, you know, let's be honest, didn't really bring that extra dimension those last few years. I mean, and you saw more so in the first game against Edmonton, second and short, even third and short on a couple of times. He did that little bootleg around the left side, and instead of getting 1 or 2 yards, he gets 17 and sets him up in the red zone. So, yeah, the most impressive thing about this kid is that I think he just doesn't get fazed, like I said. I mean, Brian Burnham goes down on the first half the other night, and, you know, some young quarterbacks might, you know, get a little apprehensive about losing perhaps their best and most reliable target. And what does Nathan do? He says, okay, I'll make Dominique Rhymes the star of this game, kind of thing. But that's kind of the most impressive thing is his ability to adjust on the fly and stare adversity in the face. I mean, look no further than last year. A crazy turn of events. We're in Saskatchewan week one, and it turns out Riley can't go. And you're thrusting this kid into a starting situation in Regina, 33,000 fans. And, you know, despite not getting the win, I think we can say he sort of passed that first test with flying colors. So I think, yeah, just his ability to sort of adjust on the fly and deal with adversity as the game goes on, along with that athleticism, like you say.
Matt Baker's with us, all things BC Lions. BC kicks off week 4 in the CFL in the nation's capital as they visit Ottawa coming up on Thursday, 5:30 kickoff, Calgary time for those two teams.
Matt, I wanted to ask you about the relationship that you've seen between Nathan Rourke and head coach Rick Campbell and how that sort of played itself out to this great start that they've had this year.
Yeah, that's key. Head coach and quarterback are arguably on the field your most two important pillars. If those guys are on the same page, then it tends to work out from there. Again, I mean, 2020, I mean, these two guys had a lot of time to get to know each other before stepping on a practice field together, right? I mean, even though that there was no football played, there was a lot of Zoom meetings, a lot of discussion, preparing for the return, whenever that was going to be. And, I mean, Rick Campbell, I remember on draft night, was a big proponent along with Neil McAvoy, and the GM at the time was Ed Hervey. And it was kind of almost, they came to the realization, yeah, we might have Michael Riley here for 2-3 more years, but, you know, we need that next one. And, yeah, that's, that dynamic, that relationship, it's impressive because Rick Campbell's a, you know, I hate to put these labels on, but he's a defensive coach first and foremost. Remember, I mean, career defense and special teams position coach before he became a head coach in Ottawa. And, you know, a lot of times you hear stories about how coaches have a certain background and maybe they don't understand and relate well to quarterbacks or players on certain positions. That's not the case here. So, yeah, that's a dynamic that's really strong between those two. And I think you can tell from what I see sort of being on the inside here is it has a positive trickle down on the remainder of the organization for sure.
I want to talk about a couple of areas away from Nathan Rourke because it has been a really good team effort. I know Rourke's the story right now, but there's been plenty of positives to focus on for this BC Lions team through two games in 3 weeks of this season. And I wanted to ask you, you mentioned it earlier in an answer to Will there about Brian Burnham. Dealing with a rib injury, yeah. I understand he didn't practice today. How severe do you think that injury is, and how big of a loss would that be for the Lions offense to not have him against Ottawa?
Yeah, so they expect Burnham to miss about a month. I believe he'll officially go on the 6-game injured list, but as you guys know, that doesn't necessarily mean he's out for 6. I mean, the schedule kind of helps in that regard because we actually do have 2 more bye weeks before Labor Day. 3 bye weeks in the first 8. Bit of interesting scheduling maneuver there. But, yeah, I mean, you saw firsthand they were able to sort of rectify that with Dominique Rhymes doing his thing. But it is a big loss, not only for the on-field production. You know, Brian Burnham has become one of the more undisputed leaders of this football team. So it's his voice in the locker room that will be missed as much of what he's able to do on the field. But I think if you take a glass half full approach, you look at it week one, one big over Edmonton without having to rely too much on Burnham and Lucky Whitehead. Week two, Brian goes down after a couple big plays, but the offense just doesn't skip a beat. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to just completely sugarcoat it and say, oh, they'll be fine. They got guys who can step up. I mean, I think they might be tested here a little bit. I mean, given the circumstances, it's a short week, long travel to Ottawa, playing a team coming off a bye that's going to be desperate for a win after coming close twice against Winnipeg. So, you know, it kind of all lines up. You know, if you're if you're one of those guys who does who forecast it, let's say they might be in for a letdown this week. Not the ideal week, there never is, to have a guy like Burnham go down. But they're just going to have to weather the storm and rely on a couple of these other guys to step up.
Well, and one guy that has been able to be relied upon really since he came into BC last year, and that's been Lucky Whitehead. He continues to impress. He was just shy of 1,000 yards last year in a shortened season, and now 197 yards, Matt, in two games already. BC really seems to have been able to unlock the key to his success, and he looks like a dangerous weapon for that BC offense.
Yeah, you know, that's a guy who can change the face of a drive and a game in one play, right? I mean, again, what he's done on the stat sheet maybe hasn't jumped out yet, but you know, you get a group of receivers like that, use a guy like Lucky as a decoy, and you saw one of those, it was the play to Katoy, I think, last week, where you thought they were going to check it down to Lucky, but then they noticed that Javon was wide open in the end zone. Right. So he's beneficial that way. Yeah, this is just a guy, you know, his speed and athleticism is hard to match. And he's also, it's also kind of cool. He's also become quite the fan favorite here. Like, I have a couple friends who have young kids who are just getting into football, and they're all Lucky Whitehead all the time, which is great because with all due respect to the likes of Brian Burnham, and we've talked a bit about Mike Riley here, you know, going into last year after losing a year of football, guys, for lack of a better term, a bit of an identity crisis. And it's a big challenge for all CFL teams. I don't know if it's player movement or what have you, but, you know, who's that next guy that's going to step up and be one of the faces of this team? And we've talked a lot about Nathan Rourke here, and Lucky Whitehead is the guy you mentioned his credentials there. So, yeah, he's a big part of what this offense is going to be have to get done here for the next few weeks. And the most intriguing thing about him is he can kind of he's a big play guy who can change the tune very quickly. So we'll see if that's on full display against the Red Blacks on Thursday.
A very prominent member of the CFL for a number of years, specifically with Hamilton, made his Lions debut against the Argos last week, and that, of course, is defensive back Delvin Bro. First of all, how weird is it as someone that's followed the league, Matt, like you have to see him in that orange and black? And how did Delvin look in game one as a BC Lion?
Yeah, it's funny because working here for as long as I have, we had a couple not so memorable trips to Hamilton. I mean, there was a playoff game in 2018, another game that same year in the regular season. And I remember thinking, this Delvin Bro guy, we can ever get him here. Like, just seemed he was always out there flying around, making big plays, big hits, sort of feeding off that Hamilton crowd. And yeah, that was one of the pleasant surprises of free agency. And I'm glad he got back in because that was kind of a bummer to start, you know, seeing him go on the injured list and wasn't sure how long he was going to be out for. But having a bye in week two sort of helped his cause. But yeah, he just brings a whole new element and a whole new energy to that secondary. And lots of talk about upgrading the offensive and defensive lines. You know, I'd be hard pressed to find a secondary with some more potential in this league. I mean, we know what guys like TJ Lee and Gary Peters, Marcus Sales, Luchez Purifoy, maybe one of the more underrated defensive players in this league. You know, and he's playing a lot at the Sam position, which is allowing a lot of those guys to fill in out of their spots. But yeah, Delvin Bro, you feed off his energy. I mean, he's the guy always on the sidelines, talking people up, encouraging people to stay positive. And that's not always easy for a guy coming in first year with a new team, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes a while, but it's his on-field play, but it's his presence on the sidelines in the room, like I was talking about with Burnham, I think will be a positive force with this team this year.
Understanding that you are a member of the BC Lions, and I don't want to get you in any hot water, I'm just curious what it's been like for you over the last little while with Amar Doman coming in and running things for the Lions as their new owner out here in Calgary. I've been really impressed among, you know, a couple of other guys around the league that, you know, what Amar's done. I remember all the hype around week one, and the fans certainly got a great show there. But what have you observed from your spot, and how has that process been with him taking over, you know, for a long time owner there in BC and you know, trying to grow the game back up in Vancouver and area.
Yeah, I mean, as great as the late David Braley was, you know, maybe single-handedly responsible for saving this franchise and maybe to an extent the entire league as well.
100%.
But, you know, let's face it, toward the end, especially, unfortunately, his health problems prevented him from being a face of the team. I mean, he was an absentee owner, right? And that's kind of one thing that was always circling in the background. Okay, you know, when he sells the team or, you know, if something happens, there has to be a local owner who can step up and have a presence in the business community more than anything. And Amar Doman's come in. He ticked all those boxes. And it's kind of funny. I mean, last year he kind of comes. It was week 3 or 4 of the season last year. And so there wasn't really a chance for him to sort of put his stamp on it yet. And you saw with the full offseason what he was capable of, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a guy who's local. He's grown up in this province. His family is very well respected in the business community. I mean, it was his dad and his uncle that basically started the family business from the ground up. And, you know, and he's been on the record as saying that he's not going to take anything from this team money-wise. He's been willing to sink money in, do whatever it takes. You saw week 1 with the One Republic concert, you know, how passionate he is about making these games in town an event again. And I've heard from people who come here as visitors, and the first thing they say is, yeah, like you can tell there's someone involved who's really passionate and cares. Like, you see more signage downtown. You have to have a presence close to where you play, right? And again, that was something that was lacking. But Amar's outstanding, does a lot behind the scenes, doesn't seek out credit. And that's something that this franchise was missing for a long time. I've always been a strong believer in local ownership. Local ownership with, again, ties to the business world and those that understand the challenges with our forever changing demographics when it comes to marketing and promoting the team. So, and I was bugging them the other day. He's like, hey, your record's improving, Amar. Remember last year he took over and then there wasn't many wins, so... He got a good chuckle out of that. And yeah, it's what can I say, guys? It's been a breath of fresh air here these last several months.
Well, and who doesn't like $5 beer and cheap concession prices? I know there's a lot of people that jumped on that quote. A lot of people jumped on that quote saying, let's go, let's see more of this, because, you know, as you just talked about, investing his own money and not necessarily worried about making a massive profit, trying to rebuild kind of that fan base a little bit. That's a big thing for a lot of families, especially when you start talking about bringing families of 4 or maybe even 6 to games. I mean, never mind the tickets, concessions can be quite pricey.
Yeah, and I don't know about you guys, but just my quick personal history, I grew up in Greater Vancouver, and my grandparents were season ticket holders for the Lions, and that's how I got into it.
Right.
You know, they started taking me to games. And I talked about changing demographics. I mean, one of the great things about Vancouver and British Columbia is it's gotten more diverse. So there's not necessarily a lot of those examples anymore of young kids whose parents grew up on the CFL. So, and he knows all about that, right? So we're having a lot more presence at events in the summertime, beaches and flag football. I mean, that's where you get these young kids interested. And the returns are very early, but I think it's safe to say a lot of people are impressed.
Couple more with Matt Baker, all things BC Lions. The Lions open up week 4 in the CFL tomorrow on Thursday, in our nation's capital against the Red Blacks. As preparations are underway, obviously, as I talked about way back when we first brought you on, Matt, there was no delay, and the week 2 bye didn't hurt the team. But what's going on in terms of preparations, and what have you made of the start of Ottawa's season? Because, again, a group that's faced with an 0-2 record, but many saying playing much better and certainly a different-looking group than last year.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a desperate opponent here this week. And they've, you know, kind of funny how it works with their schedule. They've had a bye and some extra time to stew over what happened in their home opener with Winnipeg. I don't know about you guys. I'm not a big fan of the back-to-backs in week 1 and 2.
That's
an aside. It's one of my, I don't mind overall, but But watching them play Winnipeg twice and playing them tough both times, I think was telling. I know there's no loser point, so to speak, right? There's no, you know, at the end of the day, they're winless, and maybe it's good for them that a couple other teams in the East are struggling. But, yeah, I think, again, talking about Delvin Breaux's time in Hamilton, we saw Jeremiah Masoli perform pretty well when he wasn't having injury trouble. So I know they're very confident. There's a reason they went out in free agency and got guys like Darvin Adams and the quarterback, of course. And, you know, William Powell may not be producing like he used to be out of the backfield, but he's back into a situation where he's familiar. And they're a well-coached football team, too. Paul Lapolice, we know all about Mike Benavides, what he's capable of, specifically as a defensive coordinator. So I think, given all these elements, the long trip, it's a short week, I think we're expecting to see a very tough and angry opponent here. And to me, that just adds to the intrigue. I mean, it'd be boring if you win by 4 touchdowns every week, right? Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, and I was kind of, it's funny. I was gonna mention that. I mean, we talked off the top about how well things are going and how well Nathan Rourke has been or how well he's played in these first couple of games. I'm curious, too, from that perspective, Matt, your thoughts on, you know, this team. And I would imagine if he's answering you honestly, at some point here, Rick Campbell would like this team to face some adversity.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you guys are in Calgary. Hey, how many years have you seen teams roll through the regular season and come playoff time, one game, anything can happen? Hey, we've seen that here in BC. So, hey, this team's going to be tested. I mean, you look at this stretch. We've talked about some of the challenges this week. Winnipeg's coming in here next week, and you think the Blue Bombers might want to have a couple of things to say about this team from the West Coast off to a good start. I mean, they're going to want to prove that the division is still theirs. And interesting scheduling. This Lions team will travel to Calgary twice, Regina twice, all before Labor Day. So this Ottawa trip and then 2 weeks to Calgary and Regina, that's it as far as road trips go until the middle of September. So you're really going to see this team get battle tested with all these Western games, road Western games as well. And I don't know about you guys. I like the increased divisional play. I've seen a couple of people comment on the fact that every team should play every team twice. I'm not so sure about that. I like the fact that we're going to see Winnipeg 3 times as well as Calgary and Edmonton. So yeah, this, if you think this team isn't going to get tested here quickly, you'd be sadly mistaken. And I think they're up for the challenge.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think I saw Logan nodding his head when you were mentioning that as well. I think we're huge fans here of increased divisional play as well. I don't have to tell you about Calgary fans and rivalries with the Riders and the Edmonton Elks and certainly with the BC Lions. And that's what we like. That's what we want to see. And can't wait to see how this year plays out. Matt, can't thank you enough for the time, man. This was fantastic. And we'll do it again soon.
Hey,
mentioned those trips to Calgary. We'll get you in studio here, too. That would be fantastic. So great stuff, man. Enjoy this week in the nation's capital. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Anytime, guys.
There he is, Matt Baker, all things BC Lions, their manager of communications and content, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 13-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery. Call 403-248-3344 and dine in tonight at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. Logo, what's on deck here in this hour? Or into hour number 3.
Well, let's check in with someone from Daily Faceoff. Not Frank Saravelli or not our pal Tyler Yaremchuk, but how about Mike McKenna, the former NHL goaltender, now doing NHL analysis for Daily Faceoff. Lots to dive into with Mike on the NHL playoffs, the goaltending future for Darcy Kuemper and the Colorado Avalanche. And look, it's always good to pick the brain of a goaltender when you're heading into free agency and see what guys Mike McKenna might have on his must-add list if you're a team like perhaps the Toronto Maple Leafs looking for a new netminder. We'll ask Mike all that and more when he joins the big show next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.